Hello and a very warm welcome to Political Economy with Shweta Punj. This week we are discussing a state that has given India 9 prime ministers. It is as big as Britain. It sends 80 members to the Lok Sabha. It's also a very complicated state, and it is widely believed that the road to New Delhi passes through Uttar Pradesh. To understand what are the issues shaping this election in UP, I have with me Mr. Sharad Pradhan, who understands UP in and out. There are very few journalists who can claim to understand Uttar Pradesh the way Mr. Pradhan does, and he's recently traveled all across the state. So we are hoping to get some insights from you, Mr. Pradhan. What's it looking like? Is there? Let me just begin with the first question that's probably on everyone's minds. There's so much being written, so much being reported. We've seen massive interviews, massive rallies being held in UP. Is there a Modi wave this time around, if you were to compare it with 2019 or 2014?
Well, that's a very good question. And in fact, that is the first thing that has become noticeable. When the election began, it seemed like it was a cakewalk for the BJP because of Mr. Modi. Brand Modi was at its peak, and the Ram Mandir had just been consecrated, that consecration ceremony had just been held. And BJP itself, top BJP leadership, was hoping to sail through very smoothly on the name of the Ram Temple. But as the election moved from the first to the second phase, things started taking a different shape. And it started becoming very increasingly visible that brand Modi fatigue was there on ground. That Modi magic seemed to be getting faded away. For whatever reason, one had not thought, even I had not expected this. And because people got down to the local issues more than, because Mr. Modi perhaps was not able to build a narrative. He was expecting too much from the Ram Temple, and probably that would be the reason that he did not start with a narrative that could have pulled the BJP all along. And the moment, I think, realization dawned that the temple is not working the way they were expecting, he switched to the typical communal card in BJP, for which BJP is known to excel. And that's what brought him down to narratives like Hindu Musalman, Mangal Sutra, which really, I think, even those, particularly the fence sitters, who were kind of overawed by Modi, and they were inclined to vote for him in the last two elections, they started questioning, "Ki, arre, ab to ye bahut zyada ho gaya. It's too much now. Why is he talking like this?" So I think that also, and then soon after that, probably, you know, as Modi is known to not be changing narratives. He keeps a narrative and he's confidently moves around, and it has worked in the last two elections. But this time, then he had to get down to India-Pakistan. So it was again more, of course, extension of the Hindu-Muslim narrative by bringing in Pakistan. I think also further reflected his frustration with whatever was happening. And with four phases down, and then you could see the way a kind of euphoria began to be visible in the opposition. Opposition seemed to be, because opposition had not risen to the occasion in time, I would say. It was like I said somewhere, ki, "Der aaye durust aaye," because too late, it was too late in the day. They were not even able to finalize sharing of seats. It really took too long to do all that. But eventually, after the second phase, suddenly some X factor brought them up together again, and they all seem to be just gunning for the BJP with far more gusto and drive, which was not visible earlier. And then the kind of things that, you know, it began with the electoral bonds, for which the BJP had no answer. A party which rode to power in the name of corruption of by the UPA, which was there, very much there. In fact, let me tell you, Shweta, I was among those who voted for Modi in 2014 because I felt that here is a man who is going to rid this country of corruption.
Right.
He deserves to get a chance. I was ready to not condone what he did in Gujarat in 2002, but certainly there was no need to carry the baggage. I felt it is, how long is the baggage to be carried? Let's give him a chance. The man has the metal in him. But as it unfolded, as it went by, I think 2016-17 onwards, 16 in particular, I think was the turning point when I realized that I was a big fool. I was fooled. So, so it is, I think many people must have felt that way. Of course. Because he was succeeded in building a cult about him. So there's a lot of blind following also.
So let's talk about the issues that that are shaping this election, and you raised the point about how this is an election which is being fought on local issues, and it's not the Modi wave is probably a little muted this time around from whatever you're saying. Are we getting a sense that local issues are taking precedence over the big, larger national narrative, built on religious sentiments, built on, national security and so on?
You know, national security was such a humbug that was taken to a hype because of Pulwama and Balakot, and which a lot of people look at with a lot of suspicion. So, I mean, that part, nobody knows what actually might have happened or happened. But certainly, another, you can play a card once. It may not, that same trump card may not work every time. So, it was always felt that a new Pulwama could be engineered. But that didn't happen. But you did see, now there is a talk of POK. And they are busy. I was on two channels yesterday and I found the anchors who are larger, seem to be more loyal than the king. They were both trying to build this narrative that the BJP wants 400 because they want to recapture POK. So I said, you don't need to have 400 seats to, you need to have a strong, good army, which we have. What is, that is, then this narrative of 400, their own people, now they're trying to attribute it to the opposition. But fact remains that his own people, at least four of them, prominent BJP leaders, had said that we want to change the constitution. It is another matter that Congress gave it a twist that they want to change it because they want to do away with the reservation. That's a political strategy of any party. That is working.
That's worked against them. That's alienating the Dalits.
That is already alienating the Dalits in a big way. Because Dalit vote was a large floating vote, disillusioned by Mayawati because of her overt leaning towards the BJP. So that Dalit vote is going to make a lot of difference this time. And it's a large chunk. So even if now Mayawati, you will see how her support base is getting eroded. And in the next, from one time from some 24, 25%, it has came down to 17, 19. Now it is 12.9 or something. And in this election, I think it will dip further to a single digit. And all that vote, which Modi has very systematically tapped in 2019, very systematically, he had done it, is now getting away. It's being weaned away by the opposition simply because of this. So one faux pas committed by, and nobody said a word. Now they are busy disowning all of them. Whether it is Arun Govil or whether it is Giriraj Singh, they are disowning. No, it's not the party decision and all that. But that doesn't work. The damage is done. So these are things, that the religious and religion negative is, the narrative is not working because caste seems to have overtaken. And this is a very important factor for the Dalits and OBCs. And look here, you want to do away with our reservation. You know how touchy is that issue. So now they are giving another twist that, these guys want reservation for Muslims, which is not said anywhere. They started attributing all kinds of lies, which was not there. All kinds of things to the Congress manifesto, which did not exist there. So you can say anything because you have a control over a large section of the media. You can get away with it. But at the end of the day, people do try to, then, you know, then you start studying, okay, is this there or not there? No. This is a false narrative. You can't put an election on completely false narratives. And this is, and of course, they have taken the, they've taken the attention of the electorate away from electoral bonds. That is, we have succeeded in that. But they've not been able to build a narrative which could gel with the large chunk of the population across the country, even in Uttar Pradesh.
So, so this double engine ki sarkar, you know, which is one thing that they have been talking about. You have Yogi in the state, you have Mr. Modi at, in the center. Is that resonating with people? And one more thing, the law and order situation, which a lot of people that I have spoken to in UP say that that's a huge positive that Mr. Yogi has brought in. So are these two factors playing out? Are they resonating with people?
Well, it has resonated with people to an extent, but not to the extent that it is being shown on their various platforms. You know, the fact of the matter is that the Yogi Adityanath, you know how much he spends on his publicity. It's a lot about publicity. It's mind-boggling. It works out to about 3.5 crores a day. That is how it is, about 1400 and some crores. His publicity. So, you know, you are bombarding people with a lot of half-truths, which people are bound to believe because they have no other source. And this is what has led this impression to prevail. That, wow, what a great law and order. You know, it contradicts the National Crime Records Bureau reports. The 2022 report in the NCRB report describes the rapes in UP is, I think, every 8 hours there was a rape in UP at that time. This is Yogi Adityanath at his peak. And which in Akhilesh's time was 6 hours. So that the difference of only 2 hours. It is not as if some drastic change, the kayakalp ho gaya hai, law and order ka, and the UP has become suddenly from haven of criminals to a heaven. It hasn't. Which is not true. Crime continues. You see the kind of, if women can't be secure, you go about protecting a chap like Brijbhushan Saran Singh, who's known for openly molesting. He's been charge-sheeted by the Delhi police for molesting our top protesters. Yes, it travels. Then your attitude towards other things, whether it is Bilkis Bano, okay, Bilkis Bano, you know, you can build this narrative that, okay, she's a Muslim woman, so who cares types. But it does make people think that if you are granting remission to the rapists of those people, and ultimately Supreme Court sends them back behind bars, you don't do anything in the Hathras case, the Dalit woman involved. All these factors play. You first build a narrative on falsehood, and then you said, look here, what is what we have done. This is what they did with Love Jihad. You know, which I mentioned in my book also, this law and order thing, why I'm mentioning, because law and... Now, Love Jihad, UP in 2 years had only 17 cases, out of which 13 were found to be false. So now, there's so much Love Jihad happening. It seemed as if every Muslim boy is running after a Muslim girl, a Hindu girl, and taking her away and enticing her into a marriage. It's nonsense. So, you know, when you build, of course, but they succeed in sending this message because of the bombardment that they can do with the media on their side.
Okay, so I want to talk about the different communities. You mentioned about the Dalit vote that is feeling a little alienated from the Modi government. How about the Jatav community and the other? It's a melting pot of different castes and communities. Yeah. How do you see that playing out in the voting pattern and voting behavior?
Well, you know, Jatavs form about 9% of the 22% of the Dalit vote. Continue to remain with Mayawati and they would do anything for them.
Okay.
But the non-Jatavs are in a larger number. Though I am told by some insiders that a small section of the Jatavs have also now seem to be drifting away from Mayawati because they can see that she's not doing anything for them. And she has further, you know, made people to believe that she's become an agent of the BJP when she sacked her own nephew, Akash Anand, whom she had, you know, coronated with so much fanfare that he is going to be her successor and all that. And overnight, simply because he blasted the BJP, the poor fellow probably didn't know that Benji didn't want that. And the message that has gone down with the Dalit community is, here, the BJP walas are pressurizing her to do it. And because of all her wealth, because for her, as they say, she is more interested in dollar than the Dalits. And she has made it amply evident. so that Jatav, a large section of the Jatav vote will continue to be with her. And that will be the... But I wonder if Mayawati will be able to pull through more than one seat.
Okay. I want to talk about Amethi and Raebareli. Again, we saw a heated contest in Amethi in 2019, in 2014. And now we have a Congress representative in Amethi. Mr. Rahul Gandhi chose not to contest from Amethi. How do you see that playing out?
Well, initially, the message came, I was quite nonplussed. How come? Because Rahul Gandhi was the best bet for there, and people there, I had been to Amethi of late, and they were hoping that he would come. But then on second thought, I realized that this was a very smart move. You know, by Rahul Gandhi not contesting from there has taken away the sheen from this contest. If Rahul was contesting, Smriti Irani would have been in front of the camera all along. All the channels would have been blaring whatever she would want him to say. The election would have been all about the media playing up this.
But in terms of, it was a Gandhi bastion. Do you think this will back to the Gandhis? It will go back to the Gandhis? No. Or what is the sense that you're getting?
Well, KL Sharma, I have known KL. I've been watching him for 40 years since he came when, you know, Rajiv Gandhi's time, he was brought in by Satish Sharma, to whom I think he's distantly related. And he started working as a small... But the guy is a very low-profile chap who knows people by their names there, the constituents by their names. And mind you, when he was a kind of a constituency manager, the local people, whatever they wanted, with their local, their needs, their problems, they were all handled by this guy. Of course, he's not a match to Smriti Irani's profile. You know, she... Smriti Irani... Not only because she's just a minister, but her proximity to the prime minister gives her a very high profile. So this guy is no match. But you can see how jittery is Smriti Irani, simply because if she wins, it's not a big win, because you defeated an ordinary Congress worker. And in case she loses, which I would be surprised. I have seen Indira Gandhi getting defeated by Raj Narayan, who was considered a buffoon in those days. And nobody imagined, what will Rajnani, he's just a buffoon. And that's what happened. So if she loses, her politics is finished. I don't think she'll be entertained by the BJP leadership at all. And locally, she is there is a large chunk of people who are not impressed by her because of her arrogance. She's not accessible. But Raebareli move is a very smart move. If Rahul Gandhi had got contested from Amethi, he would have got bogged down just there, because it would have been naturally a challenge. Now, if he loses for the second time, it would be a disgrace to him. So now, Raebareli is certainly much safer. There's no doubt about it. And why not? Yeah. You know, in every top political leader, do you ever see any top political leader contesting against another top leader? Top leader, no. Mr. Modi will not go and contest from Wayanad. And Rahul Gandhi will not go and contest from Varanasi. So everybody looks for a safe place where the smoothest sail, a sail is smooth. And at the same time, he has enough time at hand to campaign in the rest of the country, which he is doing. And he's one chap who's taking the bull by its horn. So and the Dinesh Singh is not a patch. So, Dinesh Singh has his own problems with local people also. he's the Raja Sahab and not accessible to the people.
So just to come back to the point, so is this a contest between the contesting candidate and, you know, between contesting candidates, or is this a Modi election? That's, you know, in UP, how is it playing out? Are people voting for Prime Minister Modi, or are they voting for, say, a Smriti Irani? Are they voting for a Rahul Gandhi? Is this a Modi election in Uttar Pradesh?
I would say that partly yes and partly no. There are areas, and like, for instance, in case of Smriti Irani, it will get limited to Smriti versus Kishore Lal Sharma election.
Right.
But yes, there are many pockets where it is a Modi election. And Modi, the candidate may not be of any consequence. But it is the Modi election. But it is not a pan-UP, that's not the pan-UP state. That is not happening like that. All over,
which is unlike what it was in 2019.
It was absolutely unlike 2014 and 19. Well, it's certainly not like 19. And that is why I say that there is reason to believe that they are coming, their numbers are coming down from 2019.
And what are your projections?
Well, I'm not a sophologist, but on a rough estimate, they are looking at various constituencies, and then, you know, like Western UP was where the election started. And right. That is where, right from the beginning, it was felt that BJP is on a sticky wicket. In the second round, again, they didn't seem to recover that. And third round, it became worse. And Eastern UP, let me tell you, there'll be a lot of places where the opposition is pretty strong and giving BJP a run for the money. So it is not 2019 where you just sweep. And mind you, if between 14 and 19, they had a fall of 10 seats. They had 72 in 2014. 20, it came down to 62.
24. Yeah.
And so it's, you know, somewhere it seems that the law of diminishing returns has set in.
But you're not giving us any numbers here.
I wouldn't like to. I'm not a political pundit.
Fair enough. So in Eastern UP, you said that the BJP could be in for a tough fight. Any specific constituencies that you think would be?
I think it's Azamgarh, Ghosi, even Jaunpur, and Ghazipur. Ghazipur, of course, going to be tough. And these are all, and you know, the irony is that all these places are closer to Ayodhya. And if the Ayodhya ripple effect is not visible in these places and ultimately not able to give BJP a huge edge, then you can imagine what is happening in the distant corners of Western UP or the Southern UP, that is Bundelkhand, or even for that matter, Central UP. Yes, the Mandir has its impact, but not at the scale at which BJP expected it to be. And not at that scale where even somebody like me had thought that it would happen.
Sure.
It's not.
Sure. So there were two expectations from the UP election, Mandir and Mahila. So I want to talk about the women vote as well. You know, a whole host of schemes have been designed from across political parties targeting women. You're talking about free ration, gas cylinders, toilets, everything. So are women going to vote differently from the male members of their house? Has their life become better? And could women be the crucial factor that really pushes BJP's count in the state?
Well said, Shweta. Yes, women do, because as particularly the ration, it's not the cylinder, because cylinder, they're not able to refill the cylinders. That's a big problem, because they don't have the money. The cylinder prices have gone up so much, and the government has done nothing about it. So, but the ration is a very labharti, as they call it in Hindi here. The beneficiaries of the ration are really impressed. And they and Modi and his government has done, left no stone unturned to repeatedly, you know, drive home the point that this is given by Modi. You know, the bags with the ration bags have picture of Modi right there. And of course, Yogi with his... you know, but his own aspirations, he added to that, and he has his bag or has his picture also along with that of Modi. So it is, that is something which is working. But at the same time, there are people, you know, there may be a large chunk of women, yes, but there are, you find when you go to the villages, you find they say, they show you their cylinders which they are using it as some kind of a, they put a plank on a wooden plank and use it as a table because they can't fill the cylinders. They are back to the chulas.
Okay.
But there are other things also, like electricity. Now, Pani, this Jal Shakti has, in UP, there's a lot of publicity about Jal Shakti, everybody, houses. Yes, the taps are there, but there's not, water is not there everywhere. There's a high level of corruption in the Jal Shakti mission, about which Yogi, who's rated as a very honest chief minister, has not been able to do anything because that is controlled by the Delhi Walas. And with whom Yogi doesn't have they don't get along. So tons of money is being, and the villagers suffer on account of that. So that may prove to be counterproductive. It was a very good scheme if it had actually been carried out and people had benefited out of it.
Let's talk a little bit more about the Mahila factor in terms of the number of women voters that are there in Uttar Pradesh. How have they voted traditionally? If you could, share some insights on that.
I think women have, as I said, it's a divided opinion. But yes, a large chunk of there's 50% women voters. And I would say that, 30% of those women may be influenced by various things that Modi has done.
Okay.
But 20 to, it is a little edge on this side, on towards the BJP. But another chunk, and women are coming out in large numbers to vote.
Correct.
They feel that all this is the publicity, it is publicity as far as their security is concerned, because they face the music every day. They can't even go and get a report lodged in the police station.
Absolutely.
And incidents of rape, molestation have not come down. It's a different matter that, a dowry death is converted into suicide by the police. So, which has been happening earlier also, because corruption in the police is something which hits women very hard. Women find it extremely difficult to even go to a police station to lodge a report.
Absolutely.
Because they are looked at, looked at with contempt. They are treated pathetically. They are treated. So they feel that all this is, it is not true that women's security and Modi. Yes, they were trying. They also claim that women, Muslim women, are under their influence because they have been able to do away with the triple talaq law. This is a completely false narrative. This is not true.
Okay.
No matter all this Paswanda Muslims, they did try to, dent the Muslim vote by dividing them in the name of forward Muslims and backward Muslims by calling them Paswandas. But that also has not gelled. So even their claim about Muslim women going for them it does not hold water.
Okay. But you're saying that the ration scheme seems to have worked.
Yes,
and
yes,
and women are exercising their franchise independent of how their family or how the male members decide to vote.
Particularly, where education levels are better. Where awareness and education has made a lot of difference for women to assert themselves and say it, because not everywhere are they able to do it. But yes, that is, you find this visible in a large part of central UP. You find this in Bundelkhand. But in western UP, women are still subjugated by certain communities. The kind of things that happen there. There's a male chauvinistic society there. So there it may not be. But yes, there are, UP is such a country. So there are pockets where women will assert themselves and not go with their families, who may otherwise go against the BJP. The families may go against, but they conclude with?
Very, very quickly, Mr. Pradhan, just summing up towards the end, how is this election different from the other two elections that we've had, 2014 and 2019, where Prime Minister Modi is concerned and where the Congress Party is concerned and where the India Alliance is concerned? What are the key things that you see emerging from the 2024 election?
Well, I think, as I already said, the fatigue of brand Modi. It is no more just a Modi election. That is one major factor. As far as Modi is concerned, yes, his schemes, particularly the ration scheme, is working very well. And people are indebted to him. But it is not as if everybody who's getting an 82 crore people who are getting rations across the country will all vote for him. But considering that the brand Modi has got dented, will certainly have adverse impact on the fate of the BJP. As far as Congress is concerned, Congress may not have done anything to rejuvenate itself in UP, where they have been in complete dumps. But Rahul Gandhi is reinventing himself after the Bharat Jodo Yatra and the other Nyaya Yatra has made a lot of difference. It has instilled some kind of adrenaline into the whatever little rank and file that they have. Honestly, they have made no effort to revive the party. But today, they are, and what they are getting naturally is their support base. If they are getting Dalits who are drifting away are also going to the Congress. Mind you, Dalits have traditionally been with the Congress. Muslims who were going head over heels for the Samajwadi Party till Mulayam was there were in double minds, because Akhilesh did not rise to the occasion to help them out or stand up for their cause on many occasions. So even Muslims now that they are together, of course Akhilesh is not going to lose on the Muslim vote because he is with the Congress. Today Congress is able to build it has just come without any, I think, effortlessly they have got this support of the Muslims as well, who say, okay, now that they are together, we'll vote for them. We'll vote for Samajwadi Party with the Congress.
So the India Alliance being led by Samajwadi Party with Congress as a junior partner of sorts is working out in terms of the appeal to the voters. How does this triangle work out? You have the BJP, you have the India Alliance, and then you have BSP. Whose votes is BSP going to cut?
Well, BSP was intending to cut, as it seemed very evident, they were intending to cut the vote of the India Alliance. But BSP, as I said earlier, is losing out very badly on its support base. And you will find, and that is simply because Mayawati decided to, initially, for 2 years, she was nowhere. Then when she came out of her cocoon, which people believed was because she was scared of ED and CBI raiding at the, considering the kind of wealth she has acquired. All politicians acquire ill-gotten wealth, but in case of Mayawati, it was more than visible. So that was one factor which really disillusioned. Her statements, mind you, I must mention that. Her statements in the past 2 years were clearly directed against the India Alliance and the Congress and Samajwadi Party than against the BJP. And to top it all, she took action against her own nephew, Akash Anand, simply because he blasted the BJP. So Mayawati is, I think, a spent force, and she's not going to make much of a difference in this election. She has exposed herself very badly.
The political fortunes of several very important leaders are closely tied to what happens in UP. Mayawati is one. Mr. Gandhi is another. Mr. Yogi Adityanath. How do you see their political trajectories playing out? And this is my final question, and then we'll end this conversation. But UP is such an interesting state. There's so many angles to this. There's so much to talk about. So how do you see that playing out? How do you see political fortunes of these key important players in the UP elections right now play out going forward post June 4th?
As far as Rahul Gandhi is concerned, much will depend on how he manages to take the Congress back on its rails. Is he able to do that? Will be a million-dollar question.
If he's not able to do that,
he's going to lose out in the sense that then he will not be able to remain the inheritor of the Congress legacy, which the mother is doing, moving heaven and earth to do. Which I think
this is a overtaken by the system. Mr. Gandhi.
Certainly, sir, for Mr. Gandhi. As far as Yogi Adityanath is concerned, there's a lot of controversy, you know, considering what Kejriwal has said the other day, that he would be shunted away if Modi gets 400 seats or what. That is a kind of, this is being discussed in several circles of the BJP for quite some time. That because Yogi Adityanath, that book that I wrote on Yogi Adityanath, published by Penguin, has a chapter on, the last chapter is on his future prime minister, his aspirations to become prime minister. And, you know, this has been on the cards that, you know, Modi for certainly would prefer an Amit Shah to a, because when Amit Shah is this blue-eyed boy, he's the guy who is Modi's shadow, like remains like Modi's shadow. And certainly if at all, he wants to hand over the reins, which I doubt in his lifetime, I don't think he's not the types who would like, then it will be, and Yogi could become a major hurdle in Amit Shah's path, because Yogi certainly has a much larger profile, more popular profile than Amit Shah as a Hindutva icon. So I mean, the only way that he could be kept out of the way is like induct him into the union cabinet. You know, you can, a UP chief minister commands far more
power,
authority, far more clout than a central minister. So this is still being debated in many circles, whether if Yogi, what would he do? Would he go? Would he agree? Or would he defy? I don't think he will be able to defy if that decision is taken. Because Modi has done it with Vasundhara Raja Sindhya and Rajasthan, with Shivraj Singh Chauhan, and both of them were certainly bigger leaders, more popular leaders than Yogi Adityanath. So there's lots that can happen, but that will depend on how many seats Modi is able to cobble up at the end of the day.
So the number of seats that the BJP gets in UP, will it be a reflection on Prime Minister Modi, or will it be a reflection on Mr. Yogi Adityanath?
No, it will certainly be a reflection on Mr. Modi. That Modi, Mr. Yogi Modi is not in the not as much involved in the scheme of things, and the vote is being asked in the name of Modi. So it will be a reflection on his popularity, his clout.
Okay, thank you so much, Mr. Pradhan, for that very insightful conversation. Of course, we'll have you back on Money Control on the 4th of June. We're going to take some time with you on that. And let's just hope that we the best party win. Indian elections are very interesting for journalists, and this time even for the world. If you look at the way the stock markets are reacting, it's just an interesting time.
Makes sense. All right. Thank you so much, Shweta. It's a pleasure to be being with you.
Lovely talking to you too, sir. Thank you so much. And with that, it's a wrap here from all of us at Money Control on how will UP vote. We do hope that we offered you some insights into the voting pattern of Uttar Pradesh, the big leaders that could emerge or that could fail after numbers come out from UP. Thanks so much for tuning in, and thanks so much for watching. We'll of course keep coming back with more right here on Money Control. Thank you.